Mr. Bailey, Rewan, could you tell me where you come from?
I'm a Cockney by birth, but lived most of my life in Watford in Hertfordshire until I moved to Portsmouth in 1962 to take up a new post.
And were you educated in Watford?
I was educated at Hemel Hempstead Grammar School.
How did you come to be in the forces?
I volunteered on my 18th birthday.
Why did you do that?
I don't know. I suppose the sort of thing you do when you're 18 years of age.
Can you tell me how you came to be in SOA?
Yes, I was in the Royal Armoured Corps. I joined up in the Royal Armoured Corps and I trained as a wireless operator gunner. And in 1943, there was a circular which came round to the regiment in which I was serving asking for volunteers for special duties. That was all it said, but it said they were interested in wireless operators, and I volunteered.
Did you have any conception when you volunteered as to what you were letting yourself in for?
No.
Well, you didn't even imagine what it might be?
No, not really. No, I'd really no idea what it was about.
So what was your motivation for volunteering? Just boredom?
Probably because I was fed up with what I was doing. I think the regiment I was in wasn't a particularly aggressive outfit. They weren't. They were more interested in leave than battle. And I suppose as a young lad I thought, well, if I'm going to get into it at all, I must get out of this regiment.
What was the process of being accepted for the special?
We went for an interview in Oxford, and we were tested on Morse sending and receiving. Of course, in the Royal Armour Corps, it was more radio work, but by voice. So the level of Morse was not very good, but anyway, it was just adequate for training. And they told us a little there of what was involved, that you know, there would be parachute training, and the likelihood was that we would be dropped to clandestine organisations on the continent. And that was how I came into it. I went back to my unit, having signed the Official Secrets Act, and shortly afterwards we were directed to Henley-on-Thames.
Were you given the opportunity to back out once they'd told you the nature of the work?
Yes, I think so. Can't remember now. I don't think we were very interested in backing out. But you could back out at any time. And until you actually dropped, you could back out at any time you wanted.
Did people?
Well, I never heard of anybody actually backing out. Yes, I did. There was one chap who was accepted as a glider pilot. And after we started training, he got the invitation to become a glider pilot, and he decided he'd do that. One or two were discarded because of shortcomings, either in the wireless field or they failed to take their training jumps. They were discarded en route. Anybody that they felt was not up to the job were posted back to their unit.
What was the training at Henley-on-Thames like?
That was largely radio training. We were all radio operators at Henley. We used to train at Fawley Court. We did a number of exercises in the country. We used to go up to Dunbar in Scotland in groups and communicate back to Henley, to Fawley Court. A lot of physical training. Unarmed combat, small arms training, explosives, that sort of thing.
What did you think of the quality of the training that you got?
Very good. Top notch.
Do you remember anybody who trained you?
The only person I can remember by name was a Sergeant Lettuce, who was a first class radio operator, wireless operator, and he generally took us for radio training. He's very good. I can't remember anybody else by name.
Were there any aspects of the training which caused you problems?
No, I don't think so.
Did you have to have any knowledge of foreign languages?
Well, not necessarily, although I had schoolboy French, which was improved later on, which we might come to in a minute.
Can you say something about the meaning of the term Jedburgh and Jedburgh teams, as you understood it?
Well, it's Jedburgh is the name, and it's after a town in Scotland. But who devised it, I've no idea.
What was the composition of these Jedburgh teams supposed to be, and what were they supposed to do?
These were teams of three, which consisted of a wireless operator, who could be English, French, or American, and generally a non-commissioned officer, and two commissioned officers who would be English, American, plus a Frenchman.
What exactly were they supposed to do?
We were supposed to send back intelligence, organize supply drops to local resistance forces, and carry out any subversive operations that were available to us, such as bridge blowing, ambushes, general conflict with the enemy, harassing the enemy.
And was it in connection with D-Day?
Yes, because we went in just before D-Day. In my view, we went in far too late. We should have gone in at least 3 months before. We went in too late to be really effective.
What would have been the advantage of having gone in earlier?
Yeah, we would have achieved greater confidence from the local resistance forces. We didn't really get enough time to know them well, to know the good from the bad. And we could have arranged substantially greater supply drops in the places where they were required. And we'd have had more time to assess the enemy's strength and to carry out subversive operations.
So why do you think that you weren't put in?
I don't know. We were ready, everybody was ready, but somehow the plans just seemed to get delayed and we could never quite get off the ground, as it were.
Were you chafing at the bit?
Oh, yes. Yes, we were all chafing. Because we'd spent a lot of time and sweat training for this very thing. But we all went in just before D-Day. I think we've got to go on a bit further here, because
Please.
The training didn't finish at Henley.
Yes.
From Henley, which was largely the non-commissioned officers carrying out wireless training and other aspects of clandestine warfare, we then moved on to Milton Hall, just outside Peterborough, where we met up with the commissioned officers, where we formed our teams of three. This was done by general agreement, there was no direction. You just found three chaps who got on together all right, and you agreed to join up. And we did further training with more field exercises. We went up to Ringway in Manchester to do our parachute training. And I suppose at Milton Hall we learnt a bit more about explosives and that sort of thing, and the topography of the ground where we were likely to go.
Can you tell me about the other two people in your team?
Yes, one was a Major Smallwood, John Smallwood, and a French Major René Alcé, A-L-C-E-E, accent aigu on the first E. He was a regular officer in the Foreign Legion who was killed after the war. He trod on a landmine in Algeria during the Algerian uprising, or the Algerian War of Independence, if that's what you prefer.
What kind of men were they?
How do you mean?
In character.
John Smallwood was a very laid-back sort of chap. He didn't worry too much, but a very good athlete, which you wouldn't have thought was so if you looked at him. But he was a very able soldier, no doubt about it. And the French officer, he was a typical French regular soldier, and we all got on very well.
Was he a calm type as well?
Yes. We were a good team, really, although I say it. And then from Milton Hall, unless you want to ask some more questions about that, we can proceed on.
Please.
From Milton Hall, a group of us went to North Africa, to Algiers. And after a short period of training there in the mountains, we were ready to leave for the south of France. So that one group went in to northern France from England, and another group went into southern France from Algiers. And our headquarters for communications was Algiers.
What kind of a headquarters was that?
This was a headquarters manned by mainly female wireless operators who were first aid nursing yeomanry officers who generally dealt with the communication side of it.
They were in contact with agents in France?
That's right.
What was the name of the place in Algiers? Do you remember?
It was the place where we were stationed was not the headquarters. Now, I don't know the actual location of the headquarters. I can't remember it. But the place where we were living was an ex-French Army cavalry officers training school at a place called El Riaf, just outside Algiers.
Was it a big place?
No, not a particularly big place. No, quite small. More like a what would pass for a country house in Algiers, I suppose, set in the middle of a nectarine orchard.
Can you tell me about the equipment that you were supplied with to take in with you?
Yes.
Can you describe it and how well or badly it worked?
Yes. We, in fact, for communication purposes, we had what we called a B2 set. This was a set for transmitting and receiving Morse, and it was excellent in France. In fact, we had two sets. One was in a suitcase, which you could plug into a light socket and use electricity, and another one which was in a canvas pack in two parts, which you could use a hand generator to operate. And in fact, when I went in, the parachute attached to the container, which held the suitcase set, didn't open. That also had my personal gear in, so I got a mangled haversack with my gear and a US wireless. But the other radio, which was the canvas pack with the hand generator, was all right in a different container. And that was the one I used while I was in France, and it worked very well. The only slight problem with that was you had to have somebody else with you to generate the to turn the generator handle. But that was no problem. Then in addition to that, of course, we had usual small arms. I don't know whether you want a detailed description of those. Generally a Colt 45 automatic revolver and an American carbine with the associated ammunition.
What were your instructions about using the arms?
Well, you use them whenever the opportunity offered. Generally speaking, the policy was that radio operators, as far as possible, were kept away from the enemy. because they were the only means of communication. So that most of the aggressive activities were carried out by the two commissioned officers in conjunction with the local Maquis.
Where was your party due to be dropped?
We were dropped just outside, just north of Marseille, just outside a town called Apt, APT. And from there, on the following day, we transferred to a little town also just northeast of Marseille called Pertuis, P-R-T-U-I-S. And I lived there in various addresses until we were overrun by the Americans.
And what did you, were you dropped in at Apt?
I put the date on the form. It was
13th of August, you say, here?
13th of August, yes. Just prior to the invasion in the south of France.
How did you fly in? What kind of plane?
We flew in an American Liberator.
What was that journey like?
Well, a bit of ACAC as we neared the coast, but nothing spectacular.
And was
they dropped us slightly off target and too high. I landed up in a disused brickyard instead of on the dropping zone.
Was there a reception committee?
Yes.
Had they laid out any kind of signal on
there
the
ground? There was torches signal, which in effect were an arrow pointing in the wind direction.
What did the reception committee consist of?
These were a few Frenchmen. I couldn't tell you the exact number because it was dark. And obviously some of them were out collecting the containers, which were spread all over the place.
Had you taken precautions not to take in anything British with you to identify
them? Yes, although we were in uniform, so that the precautions that we took were probably no more than an ordinary soldier going into combat.
So you had ordinary British battle dress?
That's right.
Any insignia?
No.
What were your instructions if you were picked up by the Germans?
Well, the primary instruction was that whatever pressure you were under, you should try and hold out for at least 48 hours so that the rest of the circle with which you were connected had a chance to disappear and make appropriate arrangements.
Did you feel that you would be able to do that?
I think I didn't think about it.
Were you supplied with anything like suicide pills?
No. I think we, in uniform, expected to be treated as prisoners of war, but I think it's highly unlikely that we would have been.
You said that you were moved to Pertuis. What happened to you there?
First of all, I stayed at a private house for a while, and then I moved into an empty house next door to the local police station. And I just sent and received messages, by and large.
And you were with Smallwood and Alcyn?
Yes. They went out with the local resistance forces. They had one or two skirmishes with the enemy, but I have to say that the German forces in the area at that time were very weak, consisting mainly of convalescent soldiers from the Russian front. I think if they'd had one armoured division down there, the Americans would never have got off the beach.
Were you aware of the content of the messages that you were sending?
Oh yes, I did most of the coding.
What kind of a code was used?
Yes, difficult to remember. It was a series of book codes. You had a book with a list of letters in which you wrote the message under these letters and transmitted it in five-letter groups, which were then decoded at the other end. And similarly, messages from HQ were in the same code, which you entered onto your decoding list and decoded it. There is a technical term for it, but I can't remember it.
What was the character of the messages that you were sending? What was
generally that? About troop movements in the area and operations that have been undertaken.
Did the other two tell you anything about the operations that they had been on?
Oh yes. Smallwood, in fact, got a croix de guerre while we were there, which was fairly unusual. He did quite well.
What did they tell you about the operation?
Only that generally they'd surprised groups of retreating Germans. In fact, we captured a couple and they were interrogated in the police station. But they were fairly demoralised. They were ready to tell us anything we wanted to know because they were frightened that they would be returned to the hostile crowd of civilians outside. So, we got all the information we wanted from them.
The crowd was shouting for their blood.
Yes, maybe. And not only that, but by this time, the advance guard of the American First Army had entered the town. They were generally drunk and ready to shoot anybody.
The Americans were drunk?
Yes.
Do you think they would have shot them?
Oh yes, they'd have got to them. Fortunately, we got them into the police station in a cell and we were able to keep everybody else out.
What rank were the Germans?
There was a major and a lieutenant and a Feldwebel.
Were they Wehrmacht or SS?
Yes,
or
Wehrmacht.
So they just spoke without any rough stuff?
Oh yes, yes. We just questioned them and they told us all we wanted to know. One of the officers, I think it was the lieutenant, he said if we were thinking of sending them outside, could he please be shot where he was? I don't know what became of them in the end, but I think they were all right. I think they were treated as POWs in the end.
What language were they interrogated in?
The officers were interrogated in French, but the Feldwebel was interrogated in German. In fact, we found a German-speaking civilian who did the translation.
What was the standard French of the officers like?
Very good. Very good.
Were they able to say much of significance, do you think?
No. No. They had been... split up from their troops or their unit, and they didn't really know what was going on.
Can you tell me about any code names that were used for the group and by yourself?
Yes, our team was codenamed Citroen. My code name was Retief, R-E-T-I-F. I can't remember the code names of the other two.
Do you know how these code names were arrived at?
No.
Did you have any kind of... You didn't have any kind of cover story if you were captured. Presumably you just said that you were...
No, just... Well, we would just have said that we were British troops who dropped into the area and we expected to be treated as prisoners of war.
So it would have been a case of giving your name, rank and number?
Yes.
In the normal way?
Yes.
How long did you stay at Pertwee?
We were overrun by the Americans at the end of September. And from there we proceeded to Avignon, where the Jedburghs in the south of France generally congregated. After that, they asked for three wireless operators to go to Italy for a special task. And I and two others volunteered to do that. And we went by air from Marseille to Bari in southern Italy, and from Bari to a town called Monopoli. There we discovered that the mission was to southern Austria, but in fact it was aborted and we never went. This was number one special force. So we came home from there via, that is back to England, via Cairo and Alexandria. And after leave, went out to Ceylon to join Force 136.
When you say we, was that still the same thing?
I was really meant I and the two other operators who were with me. It was different teams in Far East.
Who were the two operators who were with you?
A chap called Cornick, Ted Cornick, and Tom Cain, C-A-I-N. Strangely enough, they both died in 1971 within 6 months of each other. They were two very close friends of mine, and it was quite a funny feeling, actually, to attend two funerals so quickly.
How would you come across those two?
We did our training together. We were in North Africa together. We all went into southern France in different teams, and we joined up at Avignon. And when they asked for three operators to go, we went as sort of three friends, really.
What was this place at Avignon where you all teamed up?
This was a hotel called Hotel Crillon.
And who was in charge of you all there, or giving the instructions?
Well, nobody really. We just congregated there. How we were moved there, I had no idea. But that's where we congregated. And presumably we were being manipulated from elsewhere, I suspect either from London or from Algiers still. Probably from Algiers.
Whilst you were in France, what impression of the French resistance did you get in terms of their soldierliness and their attitudes?